Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Help TVO create a better world through the power of learning. Visit TVO.org and make a tax-deductible donation today.
Do sports and the societal expectations that surround them come at the expense of the mental health of our athletic heroes? Teresa Fowler has investigated how stereotypes in elite-level men's hockey influence the mental well-being of boys and men, while Jeff Gervitz, the founder of Bang Personal Training, takes a mindfulness-based approach to strength training. He also leads a platform for men to take care of themselves. It's called Dad Strength. Teresa Fowler joins us on the line from Edmonton, Alberta, and Jeff Gervitz is with us here in the studio. Nice to meet you two. Glad to have you with us on TVO tonight. Let's just make sure we all know what we're talking about here. Teresa, if you would, define hypermasculinity for us.
Well, that's a big ask, and I think it's a ask that many folks are actually struggling to define. But when you think about masculinity, the idea of hypermasculinity is those traits that are like have drank in lots of Red Bull, for example. So we think about stoicism, we think about aggression, we think about violence, and we think about emotional, lack of emotional outbursts if they are not anger. So essentially, hypermasculinity is masculinity, for lack of a better word, on steroids.
Masculinity on steroids. Okay, Jeff, how can this kind of acting tough / hypermasculinity, how can that be harmful to athletes?
You know, one of the things we talk about with Dad Strength is toughness is a paradox. And so to really build resilience, we need to be sensitive to signals and responsive to them. You don't just white knuckle your way through pain. So we want to differentiate training from competition. And so when we ignore the signals we're getting from our body and we accumulate unnecessary wear and tear, that chips away at resilience. That harms people.
And it affects your mental health as well?
Of course.
It can.
Yeah, it's the exact same thing, but internally. So if we're not responsive to what we're feeling, if we're not managing it, getting support where necessary, it winds up hurting us.
Teresa, why the focus in your work on, what do you want to call it, elite hockey hypermasculine culture?
Well, for me, men's elite hockey culture is sort of the petri dish of the culture of power, because power is represented by white, cis, hetero, hypermasculinity, and that's where you find all of it in hockey culture. And so for me, it's kind of looking at the ways in which this culture, which is harmful to women, obviously, and those who are marginalized, but also harmful to the men who embrace this form of identity as a means to secure their position on these teams. And so how do we sort of stop this culture from reproducing? How do we sort of find intervention moments that speak to kind of what Jeff was saying and have men actually listen to their own bodies and their own constitutions, that hockey culture demands something different?
And a quick follow-up here, hypermasculinity versus toxic masculinity. What's the difference?
Well, for me, I do not use toxic masculinity in my work because there's nothing toxic about being masculine. Toxic masculinity is a term that's been picked up by the media and has really kind of run away, because we really need to think about what is toxic about masculinity. And it's those traits that we see in hypermasculinity. And all genders can be toxic. There's toxic femininities, there's toxic, etc., except we only focus on toxic masculinity, which blinds us to the root issues that are really at hand.
Gotcha. Jeff, what do you see as your mission, both through Bang Personal Training and Dad Strength?
It's to lower the barriers. I think that physical movement is, we've done a great job as a culture of sucking the joy out of it, but it is inherently a joyful experience. And so for people getting stuck in any place, we know not just for physical health, we know that exercise is first line treatment for anxiety, for depression. So anything that I can do to lower barriers to access and just find your way into that process, whatever it happens to look like, is important to me.
Do you see this distinction as well between hypermasculinity and toxic masculinity?
Yeah, I agree with Teresa. It's toxic masculinity is immediately polarizing. It's vague. It's hard to understand. So, you know, if you're on one side of it and you agree, great. It puts off a lot of men, and I've had conversations with guys and in the gym who are immediately sort of feel backed into a corner about it. And Teresa's 100% right. There's nothing inherently toxic about masculinity. But when we kind of buy into self-limiting beliefs, somebody else's story about what men do or don't do, and those beliefs limit us, that's inherently problematic.
Because I can see that some people would say, toxic masculinity, I don't want anything to do with anything that's toxic. But hypermasculinity, they might get into that, you know?
Sounds kind of cool.
Does.
Right? So, I mean, you know, the through line is, it's masculinity is what we decide it is. I'll be the first to say it's a construct. And so, is it done with love? You can be all the sort of classically masculine traits, aggression, you know, we'll say competition, you know, grinding through things, strength. If they're done with love, they seem like pretty positive things. And if they're done in the absence of love, that is a completely different story.
Teresa, a couple of months ago, Hockey Canada hosted the Beyond the Board Summit. For a couple of days, men's hockey was put under the microscope, and I gather you brought some research with you to that summit. What did you tell them?
Well, the essential purpose of that summit was to begin a journey for Hockey Canada about learning and development and doing things differently. And so the summit was really kind of airing out hockey's dirty laundry, for example, where I talked about how we have this sort of misguided love of the game in our country because we love a game that promotes violence, that promotes sexual violence against women, promotes hazing, promotes a lot of things that really interfere with people's love of the game. And so that summit really opened up a conversation about how do we do this differently? How do we have a sport in our country that is actually inclusive and welcoming to all genders and all races?
I'm going to push back on that a bit, Teresa, because there certainly was a time when hockey promoted hazing. There's no doubt about it. I'm not sure it ever promoted sexual violence against women. And to be sure, nowadays, neither of those things is considered acceptable in the hockey world anymore. Is that fair to say?
I would disagree with you. I mean, if we look at the news, there was a hazing incident out of Manitoba that involved five under 18 hockey players that hazed players on their teams. We also have to look at the NHL reinstating Logan Mailloux, who was confirmed guilty of being involved in sexual sharing of sexual images from someone that shared it to him. So objectification of women is a part of the game. In our data, coaches use women to incite performance. Players use women in the dressing room to steer up team bonding. And it's very much a part of this culture. And to say that it's not is continuing to allow it to happen. And it will continue until folks actually recognize the way in which sexual violence is continued to reproduce in men's elite hockey culture.
Okay, to be clear, I didn't say it's not a part of the hockey culture. I said it's not promoted as part of the hockey culture in the way that it once was. I don't know any hockey coaches nowadays who would say that strapping a player naked to a table and, you know, virtually torturing them is a good way to encourage team bonding. I think hockey's grown out of that, but you don't think so?
I do not think so. Again, we just look at the incident that happened in February in Manitoba. From our data, and these are current players who are actively playing, talked about how they were told to skate naked across the ice and drag, you know, their scrotum across the ice, having to dress up like women and sing songs in shopping malls for everyone to see. One coach even put pubic hairs around the net and told his players to hit it hard like your girlfriend. So, I mean, these are very much active moments. Sure, not all coaches, we cannot paint all coaches, but we cannot deny that this is still very much a part of the culture.
Okay, so we got a lot of work to do in hockey still. That sounds like it. Okay, Jeff, come on back in here and tell me, you got a manifesto which says toughness is a paradox. What does that mean?
Yeah, we spoke to that a bit, where if we look at resilience in the long term, we're not taking on unnecessary damage. You know, health span has come into more of a common vernacular, not just how fit are you, but how long can we extend your ability to move well throughout your life. It's about optionality. So there is wear and tear. You know, we'll always say there can be orthopedic costs to exercise, but they're less than the cost of not exercising. However, there are also unnecessary risks sometimes that people undertake, or where they will, say, ignore signals from their body saying, okay, maybe this is a time to be gentle. Maybe this is a time to back off. And if we're not receptive to those signals, we're going to lose the very thing we're trying to build, that resilience.
Hmm. What's the code of the locker room, Teresa?
Well, the code of the locker room is almost the catalyst for many of the issues that we see in hockey culture. It very much follows a Vegas rules type code, where what happens in the room stays in the room. And participants in our study, for example, talked about how they would share pictures that their partner might have shared with them within the dressing room as a means of team bonding, and that it was meant for them. The locker room really is a space that needs to have someone in the room who can speak up against these forms of violence. Oftentimes, coaches do not go in the room because they feel this is a space that should just be for the players. But I actually had a coach reach out to me who said that he's going to change that practice and get back in the dressing room to ensure that these types of behaviors do not occur. And it really speaks to also what Jeff was talking about, right? This sort of having to go against what you believe in, and the precarity that these players are under often causes them to engage in these behaviors because they want to secure their seat, because for some, this is their lifeline to support their families. So it's changing that culture and making it open, making it dialogic, and really establishing boundaries about what should be and should not be talked about in these spaces.
Yeah, Jeff, I don't know how fine the line is. Maybe you could tell me, between, you know, we're in a country that loves to win Olympic gold in hockey, and there's no other color medal that is satisfactory in hockey in this country. So we want to win, and we know that part of the game involves being very tough, violent, within the rules, but violent. How do you square the circle of that need with what you're trying to promote?
We have to differentiate training versus, or practice versus performance. Where do we need true toughness? In a survival situation, maybe at peak levels of competition? Okay, that's where we might bend or break some of these rules. If I'm in an Olympic gold match and I hurt my shoulder, I'm staying in the game. I'm not tapping out there. If I'm in the gym doing a regular day's training and my shoulder hurts, I can back off. I can find an alternative path. These aren't the same thing, and I think we fail to disambiguate them at our own risk.
Well, you know, the most famous goal ever scored in Canadian hockey history was by Paul Henderson in 1972, and he sustained a concussion in the previous game. If you were playing today, he wouldn't be allowed to play.
Mm-hmm.
Does that give you pause about anything you're saying?
No.
Why not?
It's just best practice. I mean, yeah, there are people, it's a great demonstration of grit, but we also want to just take good care of the people we're working with. And so if best practice means sometimes we err on the side of being conservative, I'm pretty at peace with that.
Okay. Teresa, in our last minute here, I wonder if you, I mean, we've all watched hockey for a long time, and we have seen a lot of positive change take place in the hockey world. As you point out, long way to go. How hopeful are you, though, that Hockey Canada and others are on the right path to breaking the sort of culture that you're talking about?
Yeah, no, there's definitely changes for sure in the wind, especially, you know, Hockey Canada has been making changes to shift the culture. But it's important to note, it's not just these organizations. It's not just the Minister of Sport, for example. It's not just Hockey Canada. It's parents, it's fans, it's coaches, you know, especially fans, you know, to Jeff's point and your point too about the 1972 game, you know, imagine if we did uphold health and safety of the men on the ice, and we're not in a survival state when we're looking for gold medals, for example. So, you know, if you've got an injury, get off the ice. You just need to look and ask, like, Phil Kessel how his life is right now, and it's not healthy. So it's really, what do we reward and value in the sport of hockey? Do we reward violence? Do we cheer the fights? Do we celebrate those reels? And it's focusing on the skills, focusing on the good things of sport. And that's what I really feel would make a difference, because the organizations are doing what they need to do. So everyone else needs to jump on board.
Jeff, give me a last quick word here on how you teach fathers to become models of positive masculinity.
We lead by example. We certainly do our best. So, you know, I'll often ask dads, do you want to have kids that tell other people to take care of themselves, or do you want to have kids that take care of themselves? And we have to show them the way.
Gotcha. I want to thank both of you for coming on to TVO tonight. And Teresa, for what it's worth, Paul Henderson will always tell you that he is glad that he was not put on the bench and prevented from playing in that eighth game, because, of course, his life would have been really different had he not been able to play and score that winning goal. I take all of your points here. I take them all to heart. But just for the record, that's Paul's position on this. Anyway, that's Teresa Fowler from the Concordia University of Edmonton and Jeff Gervitz, founder of Bang Personal Training and the founder of Dad Strength. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Agenda with Steve Paikin is made possible through generous philanthropic contributions from viewers like you. Thank you for supporting TVO's journalism.